It's time for Toronto's Top Line.
If I won that cup in Detroit, I would have tried to sign a contract somewhere else and then mailed it in the rest of my career. I would have been a Florida Panther, 3-year deal, and bye-bye.
So what'd you do after you lost the cup?
I basically did that anyway.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
We need this song. Like, I don't like this one. Junk.
What song is it?
I don't even know. It's like a rocker.
Just the guitar out of the gate.
I don't like it.
Didn't jive with what you were looking for the 5 p.m. hour?
And these people that are on, like, the Arizona screwing over Shane Doan, they need to just stop it, man.
Well, let's set the table here.
Go ahead.
He's 40. It was reported earlier in the afternoon that he's not going back to Arizona. And now Arizona sent out a statement saying, after long consideration, blah, 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 we've decided to part ways. We love Shane. He's a great Arizona Coyote, whatever.
And his agents come out and says, now more than ever, he's dying to play. Really?
All right. Well, Darren Dreger's in here, our hockey insider, and it's brought to you by Finance. What should we make of this whole scene, Dregs?
Well, it's a tough one for Arizona hockey, obviously. I mean, Shane Doan has played with the Winnipeg Jets, Arizona Coyotes for his entire career. There's no limit to this man's sense of loyalty to his teammates, both present and former, and now former the rest of the way. I had a brief exchange with Shane Doan late last week, and he hadn't decided yet as to whether or not he was going to try and come back and play. I mean, the guy's incredibly conditioned and fit.
Well, Dregs, that's what it comes down to. He basically told the organization, I want to play next year. And they said, well, probably not going to be here. Or it's not going to be here. And then he's pissed off.
Well, and look, so the issue is what happens moving forward. Because I would have thought that the Arizona Coyotes had a real good spot for Shane Doan in their front office.
Of course.
And then they're suggesting now that he's been offered a position within the organization. But, what is that, an ambassador role? Is he going to want to stay in there given the fact that they sent out a press release saying they wouldn't offer him a contract? And, he's a highly respected man, has been since the day he stepped into the National Hockey League. Maybe there's a fit out there. If he wants to play, why wouldn't a team like Las Vegas, and I mean, I'm just thinking out loud, why wouldn't you want him in and around your dressing room for a year? Maybe he doesn't play 82 games, or if he doesn't want to play at all, bring him inside hockey operations there and groom him with two real good management types in McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon and go from there. But I mean, that's just speculation. I don't know what Shane Doan is thinking. Doan might just want to stay close to home.
What if he wants to win? I mean, that's what's been hanging over Shane Doan for a long time. Will he waive at the trade deadline? Does he want to go anywhere else? I understand the comfort level in Arizona, but they've
been... So all those years that he had the option to go somewhere else and he didn't, now all of a sudden it's win or nothing?
Well, but that's what I'm saying about Vegas. Vegas can be awful. So if he goes to Vegas, and he's 4 hours up the road from Phoenix or whatever, but they're going to be terrible. So would a good team actually have a spot for Shane Doan? I can't see it.
I don't see it as a hockey
player. He can't play that way.
No. If you're looking at the two 40-year-olds that are unrestricted free agent, you'd probably go towards a Ginla than you would Doan, personally.
Or Cullen, maybe, if he plays.
Yes, Matt Cullen as well, who actually can skate like the wind and show that he was... I mean, Matt Cullen was killing a 5-on-3 in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah.
You're right, I misspoke on the 40-year-old. But I, as I've said this all along, if I'm Arizona and I made the decision to move away from him, I believe it's the right hockey move. It's just how you handle it. If Shane Doan knew 2 months ago that at his exit meetings, like, you know what, we're going to head in a different direction, and just now is coming out,
hey, if they
it just doesn't
him
smell
over,
like
shame
that.
On them. But
that's the
if
only
he just
thing
made
I
his
say.
Decision recently and said, I want to play hockey next year, and they said, well, it's not going to be here. That, like,
it's a business.
You're not 27.
Yeah, that's
a business.
They've given him ample opportunities.
And I'm
for
telling you,
years.
That's not the sense that I got in dealing with Shane directly just a couple of days ago. He hadn't decided yet. What needed to happen was for John Chyka or Dave Tippett or whoever ownership of the Arizona Coyotes needed to get in a room with Shane and say, we're not giving you a contract.
It's not here.
It's not here. But, man, would we like you to be part of our hockey operations team. Tell us what you want to do. Is there a fit to stay here? Because let's not underestimate how frustrated Shane Doan has been and how good a soldier he's been through tumultuous times of that organization over and over and over again. It's not like he sucked it up to go through one rebuild. I mean, how many times has he had to go through this in
Arizona?
He's
had 12 different owners. He's had this, new arenas.
It's, in the face of the organization. You know. So that's the only thing I think from a business standpoint, you had to make that move. But from a personal standpoint, the man deserves respect if they didn't handle that way. We don't know. I can't speak to that, but something's not smelling right for the agent to come out and like something's not smelling that it was amicable or the player accepted it and said, I get it, I'm going to move on.
I'm telling you, I think that what happened was the team came forward and said, Shane, we're not offering you a contract. If you want to play, that's fine, but we're not offering you a deal. If you don't want to play, then we'd be happy to bring you on board in our front office. But again, it's almost the cart before the horse. Yeah. With a guy, you know, that stature inside the organization, inside the community, you find out what he wants to do first. And if it drags into mid-July, who cares?
Like, but why do you have to make that decision comes back today? Though, and says, I want to play, and I want to play for your team. I
mean, he's not going to do that.
Okay, but then that's what we're saying here. Like, I would believe, because some people, again, are jumping on Arizona, and we don't know all the details in terms of how the conversation went, if it went at all. But I would argue, if you're going to call this Bush League, it would be even more Bush League to give him a sympathy contract and a sympathy spot, like he's a mascot playing on your team.
No, I wouldn't say he's a player. I'm talking about
Of course.
Front office.
But I'm saying Dregs. If he comes back to you in mid-July and says, no, I want to play and I want to play for your team, so I'm asking for a contract, what do you do?
That's different. Then your approach is maybe what it is today. But I don't think you're there yet, right? I think that they, out of respect to Shane Doan, needed to understand 100% with certainty what he wants to do this year. And if it's play, then you have to say, all right, well, we don't have a spot for you, so we're going to have to go public because so many people are asking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he said that.
Okay. Darren Dreger, Hockey Insider in studio. As for what happened over the weekend, what didn't happen over the weekend, there was a lot of buildup in terms of the 3 p.m. trade freeze, and not a lot really ended up happening.
Like, you guys, every year you screw us over. You guys, this is going to be an amazing week of transactions.
I built it up like it was going to be an unreal weekend. But then I started to realize,
we get stuck with two trades.
They have to sit on their hands to announce trades.
So that's part of it. Like, there's probably been a half a dozen or more. That's the under, probably, on the deals that Georgia McPhee has made. I talked about how curious it was that the Islanders, you know, protected 5 defense and 3 forwards.
Yeah.
Right? Well, they obviously have a deal cooked up. I mean, there's no way that they're letting Josh Bailey or
Ryan Strome.
Yeah, Strome go for free. So they're going to give the Las Vegas Golden Knights a first-round draft pick and something else to stay away from a couple of those key forwards. Now, the National Hockey League, because of the spectacle of the introduction of the Las Vegas Golden Knights, I guess felt that it was important to keep everything around this organization under wraps. Let's just make sure that everything from a marketing perspective, including the speculation and the trade news and the leaks of information, are handled in Vegas when we get there.
Right.
Doesn't make any sense to me. I think it's a missed opportunity because we know what's going on, right? We've talked about Anaheim having a deal in place. Like, does anyone honestly think that Bob Murray is putting down Sammy Vatanen and Josh Manson's name as unprotected players?
But that's where I think the confusion comes in here, is for months we were of the belief they'd have to trade one of those guys. Because how could you possibly work out two deals for two players with Vegas that would be better than what another team would pay? Let's take the Maple Leafs, for example.
Right.
But let's say Anaheim, and I don't know what they're offering to make sure that Vegas doesn't take Manson or Vatanen, but if I'm Lou, I'm saying, call me up, I'll make sure I beat it.
Yeah.
Why isn't that happening? Because it doesn't feel like it's happening.
And it could be happening. And it's, look, I think it's probably going to be a player on that list, like Clayton Stoner, and a high prospect or a high draft pick, to keep Georgia McPhee off of Vatanen. But I also think that once they extend Fowler, which is going to happen on July 1st, that Sammy Vatanen does likely get traded and they get some key pieces back, a forward or what have you. But the comparison is a sound one in what's going on in Ottawa with Mark Methot and Freddie Claesson, right? Okay, well, Pierre Dorion wasn't able to trade Dion Phaneuf. Shocking. Come on.
Right.
So he's caught. He's caught. He's got no option here. He's got to leave those guys unprotected. Well, now he's really stuck because I'm sure he's been on the phone countless times with McPhee trying to get him to walk away from Mathot or Freddie Claassen. But then McPhee's going to take that deal, and he's going to shop it.
Well, exactly.
Why wouldn't you?
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, shoot fish in a barrel.
But here's the thing, though. The way, and tell me if my interpretation is off here. The way I read their statement over the weekend about how, and I'm paraphrasing here, Vegas is going to give every team ample opportunity to keep their teams intact, that sounded very diplomatic to me. That sounded like the way teams approach offer sheets. Like, we're not going to do it. Gentlemen's agreement. I'm not going to screw you over. It kind of feels like that to me. Is that I'm not going to screw you over here. I'm not going to leverage that deal. If you feel
I would just
like,
be sewering guys,
I would be too. I would be too. Like if Manson and Batten are both there,
I got
like,
a bit
I'm
of an example
every team
of
the
that.
League.
I believe, and it's a greasy one. So Winnipeg persuades Toby Enstrom to waive his no move.
Right,
but I mean, again, when the agent gets involved. And says bluntly he does not want to play for the Las Vegas Golden Knights. He's doing Winnipeg a favor by waiving his no move. Now, there's high mileage on that chassis. Yeah. There's bad knees. There's other issues with Toby Enstrom. He's got 1 year left at just under $6 million. It doesn't seem likely that Vegas, or at least I think the mindset of Winnipeg is, it wouldn't seem likely that they would take Toby Enstrom. I think they're taking Toby Enstrom. I think
really?
They're taking him.
Really?
And look, I mean, he's a character guy, right?
He's so made on a one-year term over the years, boy.
He's, you know, on a one-year term, he's not going to hurt you. He'll be good in the room, all of those things. The problem is he didn't want to go there in the first place and probably was told by people in Winnipeg that he wouldn't have to go there. There's no way that they would take him. Just do us a favor so that we don't have to lose somebody like Lowry or Kopp or Perreault or right, someone right. like that. So now you're George McPhee. No. I'm taking Toby Enstrom unless you give me something in return
right.
that makes me not take Toby Enstrom.
Right.
And now Shovel Dave's probably doing the funky chicken, and he's got no choice. And McPhee again lowered the hammer today by saying,
this
the
is
deal
it,
making
today.
Ends today. Because we're picking our team tomorrow. So whatever you're doing, you get it in now.
Well, the same thing for me in terms of that logic applies to Ottawa. Like, a lot of people are pouncing on Mark Mathot, and why wouldn't you take Mathot? I can come up with a number of reasons why I wouldn't take Mathot. For starters, Erik Karlsson isn't in Vegas.
Right.
So, is he a good player? Yes. Is he as good as people bill him? No, he's not. He benefits from playing with Karlsson. He's also 31. Like, there are other kids that are available via Ottawa that I would take before I take Mark Mathot. So, if you're Vegas, what I would do, let's say that is the case. Let's say I'm thinking, you know what, Bobby Ryan's a better option.
You know what,
American kid coming off. But I'm making sure Ottawa thinks I'm taking Mathot, so they have to pay for it, even though I was never intending on doing it anyway.
Another example is a guy like Muzzin. You watch Muzzin play with Doughty?
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah.
No Doughty?
Yeah. But those guys are valuable assets, regardless of how good they might be. The sense is that they're good players. And so you bring
and
Mark
Mathot. Is a good player.
He's a good player.
He's a good player.
You bring him into Las Vegas, it's less about what he's going to do for the Golden Knights and more about we just need him to play well enough to the trade deadline so that some, you know, general managers in a point of desperation sees his offensive defenseman, needs a stable shutdown guy, and is willing to pay through the teeth with another first-round draft pick or whatever it might be right. to acquire that piece. Where you're not getting that for Bobby Ryan, because once you bring Bobby Ryan into Vegas, you own Bobby Ryan for the next $50 million.
Right. That would appeal to me, though, because A's a good player, Bobby Ryan.
He was in the playoffs.
Yeah. He had a great playoffs. B, he's an American kid. He's very outspoken. I mean, that's
you can sell him a little bit in that market.
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah. Like, and it's a good case study because if McPhee is going to say, and he's been pretty consistent with this, I'm building a culture here. I want to win as if we're playing in Winnipeg, not just Vegas. Like wherever we are, I want to build a hockey program. I could see why maybe he would dance around Bobby Ryan. But if there is an element of his plan that is in cohesion with the ownership, thinking I got to sell some guys here, Bobby Ryan seems like an easy sell to me. American kid, again, second overall, can score goals. He's a very outspoken guy.
Yeah.
Like, I would think there'd be people in Vegas that would find him more interesting than Mark Mathot, who I've never even heard speak before.
Yeah, and they're not going to dissect, you know, or overanalyze how poor a skater some think he is on some nights and all of that stuff. What about Evander Kane in Vegas?
He loves Vegas. He's been there before.
Yeah. Really?
Mayweather.
He's a fan.
I just,
he
but,
the money
okay,
stacks.
Again, on a short term, right? Isn't that kind of what you want? Somebody to come into that community the way P.K. Subban went into
Nashville. Well, you can never make assumptions, Darren, but if something stupid happens, everyone would say, what were you thinking?
Well, but then shame on Evander Kane. And,
I get
and,
it, but they'll say, what the hell were you thinking?
Yeah.
But well, there's also the other theory we talk about.
We talk about
different cities. New York City, Toronto. You can get in trouble in any city.
$6 million or $5 million a year. The guy can get in trouble in Ottawa and Canada.
He gets in trouble in Buffalo.
Exactly. Exactly.
Buffalo's Buffalo.
And look, I might be crazy. I think he's turned the corner. I do. I think that.
I hope so. At some point,
he's doing in his off season is none of my business. I don't care if he's in the bars and whooping it up and all this stuff. I mean, you know, I saw Mike Ribeiro in Nashville and in a couple of interesting establishments late at night. But so what? I mean, you know, what guys do in their off season is their business. But in season, man, you got to deliver and you got to stay out of the nonsense. And I feel like Evander Kane is finally getting it.
Darren Dreger in studio. What are you hearing on the Leafs? What do you think could end up happening?
Crickets. I
mean, nothing, huh?
No.
So would anything surprise you? Is there a scenario that would play out over the next month where you'd say, wow, I didn't see that happening?
Yeah.
With Toronto.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that would surprise me is the asset that Toronto would give up for, say, a Sammy Vatanen.
Mm-hmm.
How good is that piece? You know, we've shifted away from Willie Nylander, obviously, and the young core, and nobody would be surprised if James Van Riemsdyk or Tyler Bozak or a player like that was included in a package. But what's it going to take? Mm-hmm. You know, Toronto keeps talking about adding this and that and whatever else. What does it take? How willing are you to part with certain assets to get that player? So we might be surprised by the willingness of the Toronto Maple Leafs to give up a decent piece to acquire a player they need.
Yeah, I could see that being the case. I mean, it's very difficult to get a read on them. Everyone knows what they need to approach and which area of need is obvious. It's the back end. I mean, they feel great about their forwards, as they should. They're loaded up front.
Right.
They've got a number one goalie. They've got a great coach. It's defense. It's just a matter of whether or not they feel like this season or this offseason is the one where they have to do it. Do they wait another year to trade
deadline?
But
you guys tell me, I feel like if they don't do it this offseason, then guess what? The shop is going to close. Not on the Toronto Maple Leafs, but I don't ever remember a time when there were so many quality young defensemen potentially available. Right?
Right.
You've got Travis Hamonic with the New York Islanders. The Islanders are going to do something big in the next week here. And by big, I mean they're going to add an offensive piece, a top six forward, whoever that is. And it might have to include Travis Hamonic and something else going back as part of that. I mean, if it's Matt Duchene, as an example, coming back and Hamonic goes the other way, well, now Tyson Barrie is available. Well, he's a dwinger, but, I mean, that puck movement has got to help a lot of clubs, right?
Yeah.
Vatanen, you know, Minnesota can't keep all of those defense, which is why, you know, the speculation around Brodin is off the charts right now. And everybody's targeting Montreal because of the Galchenyuk rumors. But, I mean, Montreal isn't the only dog in the fight there. So there are lots of good young D. I feel if Toronto doesn't grab one of those this offseason, it's going to be a missed opportunity.
Well, and they got the money. They built up some assets.
They've got nothing, but
they're not. They're protectionless.
They're in a great spot.
They have no one to worry about. They could lose anybody. You know, even if they lose Kirby Reichel, they picked him up a year ago for Scott Harrington.
Well, somebody asked me the other day on another radio station. It was during the Stanley Cup final about Connor Brown. Would the Leafs trade Connor Brown? Well, of course they'd trade Connor Brown. But if I'm Connor Brown, I'm hoping that doesn't happen, because how many times have we seen that where a player has a tremendous year? You know, look at what went on with what's-his-name in Edmonton playing with Connor McDavid, the big guy.
Oh, no. Maroon.
Patrick Maroon. Like, does Patrick Maroon have the season that he had?
No, he doesn't.
Unless he's, you know, playing with anyone other than Connor McDavid. And I love Connor Brown. I just think that historically we've seen players chase whatever or get traded, which you don't control, and never seems to
work out. Well, he's a Toronto kid too, right? And
I don't think that they
I'm not saying
that's not untouchable by any stretch.
But from his standpoint, he understands where this team is going.
Oh,
if they end up winning a cup,
his phone doesn't ring.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
But you're right. I mean, he would be one that would be peddled, I would think. I think he would be inquired about.
Hard worker, a lot of good things about him.
Kills penalties, power play guy, scored 20 goals, cheap. mean, there's a lot to like about Connor Brown.
Yeah.
I think what would be intriguing there from the Leafs standpoint is, would they try to counter and sell Kapanen instead? Or who do they feel is actually going to be the better player?
I was just going
to
say.
They think Kapanen or Brown is the better player.
If they believe Kapanen has a higher ceiling, I'm not suggesting that, but then maybe Brown is in play. Mm-hmm. It's internally what those conversations
But teams always with. Overestimate the value of their players, especially American League
You fall in love with your players, it
you
happens.
Do.
It,
you do.
It's the truth because you're around them every day and you see how good of people they are and you want. It's as a fan base. We do it here in Toronto. You do it anywhere. You fall in love or you dislike. Here's the other thing. You dislike players more than what they are as
For
well,
sure.
too.
Yeah.
You're like, this guy's worth nothing. And you're like, hold on a second. There's other organizations be like, we'll take him.
Right.
We like this guy.
Right.
You know, so it's you're never as good as you are. You're never as bad as you are. That's the
old truth. Toronto Maple Leaf Steve Sullivan story, right? To Chicago.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Well, he didn't have God rest his soul, but Pat Quinn didn't have a lot of time or value in Steve Sullivan.
Yeah.
Anton
had a pretty good career after he left Toronto.
That's right. There's a long list of them, man. And every team's got it. It's not only exclusive to Toronto.
No,
but,
not at all.
What do you make of Mike Smith being acquired by Calgary? How different is he than Brian Elliott?
Probably not a lot different.
Right.
And I'm not sure, and I'll concede to Noodles on this, I'm not sure I wouldn't have tried to hang on to Brian Elliott, only because, I mean, you're gambling on a hope that Mike Smith can return to, you know, previous form, that he can be not just a number one, but better than that, you know, a solid number one. Yeah, he's got 2 years remaining, so you're not in it for the long haul.
Well, and that's the one thing I'll say is I think Smith's an upgrade over Elliott, and here's why I'll say it. He handles the puck better. He's proven that he can play 60 games, and I believe Arizona ate a million.
Yeah, 25%.
So
yeah, you got him at just over four.
Yeah, you got him at $4 million.
Yeah.
That's what you'd have to pay Elliott. Chad Johnson had a decent year there. I think his marketplace is smaller, but I thought initially I was like, I didn't really love the move. I like Mike Smith as a goalie, but I thought there were other potential guys you could have looked at. But then I thought, you get a guy for 2 years at $4 million who has proven that he can play in the league and can give you...
Fresh start for him too.
It's a low impact move. Plus,
but it's another gamble, though, right? I mean, it's not easy to find a number one goalie.
No,
it's almost impossible.
And they were in on Bishop, by all accounts. Sniffing around on Fleury. It's not like they just.
But they did come out and say, "It's our first option."
Right, of course. I like Trey Living saying he's a young 35.
That's the one thing it wouldn't surprise me.
He's a young 35.
But I mean, Trey Living has a long standing history with him.
Yeah, right. And Dion Phaneuf is
an old 31.
Yeah, he's a senior citizen at 32.
It's all about the sales pitch.
And you mentioned Brian Elliott. To me, it's going to be fascinating to see what the market is for him too. You know, Winnipeg's got to be in there, I would think.
I was just telling these guys.
Why does Winnipeg want to piss around with that? They got to go out and just.
This is about who's left.
That's the problem. Options, man.
I think Hellebuyck is going to be a good goalie.
Yeah.
So he's 23. You got to give him a chance to grow. Like, they're so willing to let all these other guys, you got to give Patan and.
And don't you need the right goalie to do that?
You do, but you need a veteran guy to play with a young Hellebuyck. And I don't know if it could be Elliott who could absorb some of that. It could be a guy like Chad Johnson.
Condon would be a good guy.
Condon would be a really... I think Condon's a nice fit for a lot of teams because he's a real good team guy.
Yeah.
And he can give you games. If Steve Mason's linked there, I think that may be a touch much, but I don't know what Steve Mason's marketplace is right now.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah.
I just don't see it. It'd be interesting. Who's stopping pucks in Philadelphia next year?
Well, that's the thing. There's a lot of teams out there.
I think the spot for Elliott is Winnipeg, Philadelphia, or maybe Buffalo.
Right. And
those are all non-playoff teams.
But don't get me wrong. I think Elliott's a good goaltender, but he's a 50-gamer. He's not a 70. Like we saw last year, Frederik Andersen turn a corner because he played a lot of games. And that's what I wanted to see this guy be a starter. He did, and he played real well in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Elliott took a long time to settle into Calgary's system. Johnson stole the starting job, and then by the end, Elliott was playing really well, and then he fizzled out in the playoffs. Hit a wall, and it didn't go well. But maybe they're asking too much more.
Problem with those young
nice
goalies,
fit in Winnipeg.
Like Hellebuyck, et cetera, is you see what Matt Murray has done as a real young goalie for the Pittsburgh Penguins. And You know, he's one in a million, literally. Wow. I mean, to go back-to-back in the fashion that he did. But every team with a good young goalie is looking at Matt Murray and go, well, can we have some of that?
Right. Yeah. And well, Calgary's got a couple of young guys coming up, right?
But yeah, the only thing they're missing is Crosby and Malkin. that's true. The truth, because, yeah, you know, they don't win without Crosby and Malkin. And
well, Vegas would be interesting, though, with the goaltending situation. We talked about that earlier.
Yeah.
Like, they could conceivably load up on four or five guys.
Yeah, corner of the market.
And then just start flipping them.
You know,
That's what I would do.
A lot of guys, like outside of Fleury, I'm not sure there's a true bona fide number one in there, but some guys who can carry the load. Ranta's a good goal.
See, here's the thing. Careful with Ranta, okay? Ranta was brilliant in Chicago, just like Scott Darling. And then Ranta goes to the Rangers, another team where he doesn't have to be the guy, he doesn't have to be, and New York has a good system in front of them. I worry about a guy like Ranta who could be overvalued because if you're just looking at save percentage straight on.
Right, sure.
The Chicago Blackhawks started him. He played 10 games in a row, and Quinville like seemed to be still nervous for him in the net. And he'd won. He played unreal. I think there's always a fit, but when you talk about overvaluing guys,
right?
Some guys are really good in certain situations, and when they go to another situation, they're going to get affected. I think Scott Darling could be in that situation.
Johnny Burns.
Jonathan Bernier is interesting. Unrestricted free agent. But he goes back to Anaheim and as a number two played really well.
Yep. He'll have to take a huge pay cut, but sign him at 1.5. I mean, that might be something they'd be interested in. All right, Drex. Good stuff, man. We'll track where it's all going to go from here.
Thank you.
Hopefully some activity over the next week or so.
There'll be activity.
We're banking on it. A lot of it. The Hockey Insider brought to you by Finance and Monthly Payment Plans for Big Dreams and Everyday Budgets. Joe Buck chopped up Brooks Koepka's personal life yesterday afternoon. We'll let you hear the audio. We'll break it down next. Steve Phillips will join us, our Blue Jays analyst, around 6:05. Jays in Texas tonight. Marco Estrada looking for a bounce-back start. I have no idea what to expect out of him. I think over time, it's going to come back around. He's been too good for 2.5 years. 3 bad starts in a row. You can't write him off completely, but no guarantees it changes course tonight.
No.
And they got to start getting rolling here, man. There's still a couple games under 500. You dropped 2 of 3 against a bad White Sox team over the weekend. They just feel very mediocre. Doesn't feel like they're on the verge of breaking out. So we'll see what Steve Phillips has to say about that at around 6:05. And Bautista back in the bad books because he's having a horrible June. We'll ask Steve to break down a stat line for Bautista at the end of the year that would lead the Jays to trigger the option to bring him back. Like, right. What do the Jays need to see come the end of September where they say, yes, this makes sense for us to bring him back at $20 million? So we'll get to Steve in about half an hour. U.S. Open came and went. Wasn't very eventful. The course got chopped up. I mean, 16 under, that just should never happen at a U.S. Open.
I mean, you do have to give credit to the athlete, the guys that went out there and played golf. There were some, like, 687-yard par fives. And I think yesterday, Ricky Fowler hit a driver and an iron home.
Like, really?
If they're capable of doing that, you got to give them props. But it's like they can't make it long enough.
That's the problem, man. With technology and how in shape these guys are and how in tune they are with their swings, length doesn't matter anymore. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they changed it when Tiger came on because he changed the game. Yeah. He was the first guy to hit over 300 consistently. And then all of a sudden they started expanding the courses. And Tiger was the only one that could still chew them up based on the way he played. But now everyone's caught up. Ricky Fowler can bomb it further than Tiger ever could.
It's crazy.
He's 5'8", 140.
Yeah, and it's like every couple of years. Last time was at Congressional. It was a soft golf course. And Rory McIlroy went out there and shot 16 under. I don't know if they could have ever predicted that, but it's like, seems like every couple of years they want to take their foot off the gas and leave it alone.
I hate it.
And then they'll come back with a vengeance the year after.
You know who my grit grinder is? Rory McIlroy.
For calling out Steve Elkington on Twitter?
Yeah, that guy was being a dope.
Well, Elkington, pretty outspoken guy.
He is very outspoken.
Yeah, well, I loved Rory's response. A couple hundred million, 28 years old, take a lap, pigeon.
Well, Elkington was claiming that Rory's bored.
Yeah.
You know, and listen, Rory has not been lighting the world on fire.
No.
He was brutal on Thursday and Friday.
Right, but I mean, Now, Elkington was a pretty good player himself, correct?
He was a solid player, like a tour regular.
He was known for years to have the best swing on tour.
Well, I just, for not knowing a lot about golf, I just liked Rory's response. He shut him up twice, I think, too.
He came back a couple times. The second time was a mic drop. But yeah, Elkington tweets out.
What was the mic drop?
He said it's how to spell they or
there. Yeah, it was like a grammatical thing.
It was a grammatical thing, error.
I'm not even sure if that's a mic drop. It's kind of.
I thought it was a mic drop because there were some people that had gifts behind it going.
We're jumping on
this
top
guy's
of Elkington.
Just dusted.
Well, listen, he made the point that with Tiger off the tour, these guys who grew up dreaming of beating him and passing him
have forgotten about it.
That opportunity's not there anymore. Right. You can't. If you're Rory McIlroy, you can't claim you passed Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods passed himself. He checked out.
Yeah.
The last time he was relevant without injuries and personal life havoc, the guy won the U.S. Open.
Right.
Won the U.S. Open in 08. That was the last time he was 100%, and he was the clean image Tiger Woods that
we all
knew
about. Well, he wasn't even 100% for that.
He wasn't.
Limping around the course.
You're right.
Yeah.
Rocco Mediate couldn't beat a one-leg Tiger. That was eight. They play 18 the next day at the U.S. Open, too.
He could barely walk.
Could barely walk, and he still won. So these young guys, they can't. Like, I understand where Elkington was going with that. I think there's something to it. Right. McIlroy, I'm sure, dreamt of beating Tiger, and that dream is gone. He can't.
Right.
He doesn't even play anymore. So is he maybe a little bit bored with the current setup in the PGA? That wouldn't shock me. But he's still worth $200 million, like he said. He's won majors before. He's only 28. Yeah. He's got a long career ahead of him.
Yeah,
to suggest he's done is silly.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny because, and then he chirped a more like 200, Matt. Not bad for a bored 28-year-old. Plenty more where that came from. And then he goes, knew you were a money guy. Jack won 18 and never mentioned his total cash was $5 million. And then he writes back, that's why Jack designed hundreds of golf courses. And it's new. Mustn't have taught grammar in the 50s. That was a mic drop.
Mic drop on Elkington.
That was a dusting. And then it was all the gifts of, like, people beating, like, Rocky getting beat up by Drago or whatever. Like.
Well, Joe Buck's getting that same treatment right now because Brooks Koepka. It was awkward, right? Now, Fox has had the U.S. Open, I think, for, what, 2 or 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
And they've made some adjustments. And Buck is the Jim Nantz of Fox.
Right.
Right? So they want him there. He's the guy. Thing is, he's got more on his plate than Nantz. Nantz calls golf tournaments and football games every Sunday. Buck calls baseball every weekend, including the World Series, football every weekend during the year, and now he's got the U.S. Open.
Right.
I don't know how much time he's investing into it. He's making a lot of money. He's supposed to know a lot about whatever he's covering. I guess I'm willing to give him a pass on who Brooks Koepka's girlfriend is. I mean, why would he actually know that? I'm sure someone told him beforehand.
I know, but I don't even know why that would have been a part of the notes. Like, who has that a part of their notes?
Unless she's a super, like,
Becky Edwards was his former girlfriend, and she was an All-American at Florida State soccer player. So I would assume that was a part of the notes.
Right.
Hey, going into Sunday, I'm sure they're like, give me some stuff on the leaders.
Yeah.
And one of them was probably, you know, Brooks Koepka, guess what? He's dating a girl who was an All-American.
Right.
And I would assume that he makes little notes about every player that's in contention, so he has something to say.
Just a nugget here or there.
Exactly. If Ricky Fowler had one and he hugged his dad, there's Steve Fowler, who blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? I would assume that was what happened here. The problem is he was misinformed.
Either by his own notes or somebody else who helped him prepare
like an intern
them.
Or something. Because Koepka's not dating Becky Edwards anymore. He's dating a girl named Jenna Sims.
Wow. And Brad Faxon is the one that saved the day.
Well, let's play the audio.
Yeah, I need to hear all of this.
All right, this is what happened again after Koepka's walking off 18. Major winner, first time in his career. Big moment.
Yeah.
Big send-off. Good for you. Here's what Joe Buck had in store.
His girlfriend, Becky Edwards, All-American soccer player at Florida State, pro soccer player.
Joe, that's actually his new girlfriend. That's Jenna Sims. They were all staying together this week.
So do you think Faxon saved them or sewered them?
No, I think he saved him.
You have to say you that, have by to. The way.
In,
you're an idiot.
I say sewer.
No, all I'm day. Telling you.
Who's ever going to follow up on that and care about it?
Caddy's golden rule of broadcasting is if someone makes an error like that, you correct them immediately.
On the girlfriend?
Yes.
No, stop it. I mean, you correct him if you're like, no, that's not a 5-iron, Joe. That was a 6-iron he hit on 7. Not who the guy's girlfriend
is. No, if you misspeak and...
You need to be saved immediately.
Put it this way. I work with Gord and Chris, the two best play-by-play guys in, I think, the world, in the business.
Better than Joe Buck. Is that what you're saying?
Better than Joe Buck, because they wouldn't make that mistake.
Okay.
But for hockey. So if I misspoke and they knew better, they would just interrupt and say, Jamie, actually, I think it's this. Like you move
but
on.
But the roles are reversed here.
Okay.
Crosby scores the golden goal. Chris Cuthbert, there he is, and there's his. You're going to chime in at that point and say, actually,
I think it touched a Ginla's stick.
No, that's not what we're talking. We're talking about a personal life thing, not his stick.
Okay, so that would pants to the crowd, and his girlfriend's there, and...
And Chris says, there's his girlfriend, Christine. And
okay, so let me ask you this. If you were Chris Cuthbert, you were calling it, and you said, there's Crosby with the golden goal, and I was the color guy, and it panned to the crowd, and I said, there's his girlfriend, Khloe Kardashian, and it was actually somebody else. Would you chime in?
Well, if it's someone of relevance, then clearly. But no one knows who these two girls are anyway. So
I wouldn't. The U.S. Open's winner's girlfriend, of course they're relevant.
You've heard of Jenna Sims or Becky Edwards before? Who the hell's heard of these two people?
Here's the problem. If you know better, or it's in your notes... You help out. And see, I know it's a spicy
meatball. Dude, I can't believe you would just let it go and not help the guy out. You're an idiot.
It's not helping, in my opinion. I think it's highlighting the mistake. But that's the point I'm making.
It does.
I think you're highlighting, you messed up something that's totally irrelevant. No one really cares who the girlfriend is. But now it's a story because I just sewered
you as soon as
by telling the world
Twitter
that you don't know what you're talking about.
Deadspin or awful
it blew up because of Brad Faxon. Do you think it would have been the same story if Faxon didn't let the world know that's actually Jenna Sims?
It would have come back on awful announcing or on one of those websites.
Like 24, 48 hours later.
That he announced the wrong girlfriend. But if you know better, I say always... Oh, because if Joe Buck, all he had to do is...
It's a rule in broadcasting. You help the guy out.
You discern people with the truth.
What kind of look do you think Buck gave Brad Faxon?
Like, thanks for saving me. Honestly,
I'll bet you he gave them the, are you insane?
No.
I'm Joe Buck, you're Brad Faxon.
He did have some following comments. He's like, wow, Fax, you're up to date on the guys, who these guys are dating, huh?
Yeah,
did it sound sarcastic?
A little bit, but he said, you know what, I live in South Florida, I hang out with these guys, I know what's going on.
Yeah, so it was basically like, I think he saved him.
All right, let's get a poll question going.
Okay, because that's a good argument.
Like, save him or sewer him? Faxon telling Joe Buck, correcting Joe Buck.
It's very simple. Did Faxon's comments help the situation or hurt the situation?
I think hurt the situation.
I think he saved him.
I think it's a nothing story, and it's a story that you allowed.
We're not talking about it today.
No way we're talking about it today if Faxon didn't out him.
No, because
no one would care.
It would have come out that somebody would have known that's not his girlfriend.
Yeah.
Would have been blown up to the same magnitude? I don't know.
No chance.
Wally writes in, what would have Musburger said about the girlfriend?
He would have been,
Yeah, Musburger would have been.
Take a look at her.
He would have taken it down. He would have known who she was.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's no way he would have been looking at notes. He would have been well aware.
I'm of the belief if you misspeak and your partner can help you out, they help you out, and then you apologize and move on because it happens more often than not.
I agree with you when it comes to relevant information and information pertaining to the sport itself.
Right.
This is just innocuous
banter
filler. This is filler.
But he got
Mussie's comments of what he thinks.
What a beautiful woman! Wow,
AJ's doing. Whoa. That's what Musburger would have said. Only it would have been Brooks instead of AJ. What kind of spot do you think this puts Koepka in? Like, is he rattled at Joe Buck because now his ex-girlfriend's getting the pub and the new girlfriend kind of got...
How fresh is it? Like, is it years or is it like they broke up 6 weeks or 6 months ago?
It doesn't sound like it was that long ago.
I would assume if Buck was under the impression...
Look at the poll's already up.
We got some hard workers
behind
the glass.
Did Brad Faxon save or sewer Joe Buck? I think he saved him. I'm going to vote.
I'm going to vote sewer. And it's a 50-50 right off the hop. Six votes are in. 50-50. A save job or a sewer job?
I'm telling you, I think it's a save job.
All right, we'll update that throughout the afternoon. Steve Phillips coming up. Mike Smith, newest member of the Calgary Flames as well, going from Arizona to Calgary. He'll be their number one starter throughout the year for the Flames. We'll catch up with him around 6:30. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Man, we are getting so much feedback on this Joe Buck, Brad Faxon, Brooks Koepka girlfriend story.
I know. People are like, Faxon didn't have to be a hero.
He wasn't a hero. He's doing his job.
No, hero move. Someone texting in saying, highlights the mistake. Almost looks like Joe Buck was set up.
Oh, yes. He's set up for not doing his research?
I don't know, man. Nima tweeting in, you're absolutely right, Hayes, about the Buck situation. Faxon could have muted his mic and let Buck correct himself. There was enough time.
I don't know. What if Joe Buck went into the Musburger routine and was like, oh, she's really pretty.
That would have been fine by me. At least he didn't sewer the guy. Matt tweeting in, Faxon sewered him big time. Should have corrected him off the air and given Buck the chance to correct himself.
Well, when are they off the air?
I don't know.
5 minutes from now, and then he's going to come back and make an apology?
It doesn't have to be an apology.
50-50 right now.
I'm telling you, man. You guys, I'm like Trump, man. You didn't think there was any support for me out there? I'm going to win the Electoral College on this. And
not
that's all
the
that
vote.
Matters.
You win on the vote.
And I'll win 50-50. On the vote.
Quiet.
Exactly. I think all I'm talking about is from personal experience. And I get it. You said it's more family, and maybe it was an irrelevant. But I always believe if you mess something up, correct it, or somebody else.
Someone else correct it, but highlight it at the same time. I think that's what Faxon did to Joe Buck by getting Brooks Koepka's girlfriend's name wrong.
It's Joe Buck's responsibility. Let's not forget, he screwed up. Faxon didn't screw up.
No, that's
Faxon
right.
Faxon just corrected him.
Someone texting in, and you wonder why so many people think Hayes is an idiot. You always correct your coworker. Is there like a big group of people that think I'm an idiot?
I don't know. But you correct us if we misspeak, right?
I wouldn't sewer you. Not on something irrelevant.
It's all the same thing. If it's wrong information, you have to correct it. It's about credibility.
All right, so we're going to start down that path? We're going to correct each other
all the time?
You want to go down that road?
No, we do that.
Because I've
all
let some things slide over the years. I've let some things slide.
Over 4 years, I'm sure we've all misspoken at least once.
Let's just sewer away.
No.
Sewer away.
I think within reason. I know this was a big platform.
Throw $20 in the pot for the first guy to get the first sewer in for a misquoted information.
We should do that. Let's all throw in 20. Whoever screws up and it gets outed by one of the other
two guys. Whoever corrects it gets the 20.
All right, so a correction gets you $60.
That's a $60 sewer job.
A Faxon gets you $60.
Right, if someone Faxons on this show, you get $60. Or right. $40.
Yeah, you make your money back and $40.
I'm down. I got a 20 right banger sitting right over there,
so
man.
Be careful what you say, gentlemen.
You better be real careful. This is going to adjust the hot takes on this show significantly, because we're talking the most minor detail.
All right, let's make it an even 100 then to keep you on your toes.
Hayes says he doesn't sewer Jamie McLennan, but he always sewers you on the side yawns.
Yeah, that's a bit of a sewer job.
Yeah, admitting your co-host to a side yawn. You think that's not a sewer job?
That's been a sewer job over the years.
I burped on her very first afternoon show, and you had to bring that up.
It was like the Zapruder film, too, man. We exploited that thing.
It was, but it was a full-on burp. Like, that was...
It wasn't.
Was that the first ever show we
the
were
first
on?
Ever
the first Overdrive, the first at 4 p.m. Oh, by 4:08, Barney Rubble over here.
And burped. It was a side burp, I think, at the 5 o'clock hour because we had been eating and we were getting adjusted to like trying to eat on air or eat in breaks.
Our
and
whole
everything.
Rhythm was thrown off.
We were. It
That's
took us a little
hear
bit.
About what transpired.
But if he comes out of the gate in April and May and is hitting
250. Dude, you sound like a hippopotamus. What the hell was that?
One more time.
But if he comes out of the gate in April and May and is hitting 215,
that's a body
it's a
bodily
lot
function.
Worse
that,
than
but the
I
fact
thought.
That you fought through that too, But you can't.
It's our show. We got a new audience. We're trying to appeal the new listeners.
I remember it. Like, I didn't think of it as a big deal, and then you just stared at me, and you're like, are you even serious right now?
It was a significant bodily function. Anyway, Steve Phillips will join us. Mike Smith, newest member of the Flames as well, and we'll keep you updated on this sewer job or saved him poll, courtesy of Overdrive's Twitter account, @Overdrive1050.